We are quick as a sickening ray. You'll find some of us all caught in the same gilded glistening cage, with your knife and your cowl hanging dangerous hours. What will you do with these strangest of powers? But you won't be afraid, you won't be derailed. No, you won't be afraid, you won't be derailed. Not like that. So right there, lost and weary and often a waste, and you'll find some of us caught in the same still deafening chase, with your blindness left off in a tower that rises. What will you do with yourself so divided?
You've tuned in to Pandemonium, a public affairs anthology from WRCT Pittsburgh. The opinions expressed on this show are those of the participants and not necessarily those of WRCT or Carnegie Mellon University. Email comments or questions to WRCT Public Affairs, pa@wrct.org. And now, Pandemonium.
We are sitting on Melinda Crawford Purtue's back deck, where it's a beautiful, sunny day. Thank you so much for inviting us here.
Thank you so much for reaching out to me. This is great.
Melinda, among other things that she does, well, you tell them.
Well, I'm the orchestra director and string area head at Westminster College up in New Wilmington, Pennsylvania. I'm also the violin teacher, and I direct the Scottish Fiddle Ensemble. Mention the orchestra, do all the string pedagogy stuff. If it has strings, it comes across my desk.
I'm up here because I'm a folk musician, and I want to talk to you about Scottish fiddling. Most Americans don't understand that there's a difference between Scottish fiddling and Irish fiddling. I mean, they just all think of it as Celtic music.
I know. I can't count the number of times I've been asked, oh, so you play Irish fiddle? No, I don't. I'm a Scottish fiddler. But a lot of people get them confused. They are very similar sounding. And that's sort of where the idea of the Celtic fiddling has grown. But the way I like to look at it is that if you're into languages and if you speak Spanish, you can probably understand a fair amount of Italian. Okay. Yep. But you can recognize that they're different. If you don't speak Spanish or Italian and you hear them next to each other, they probably sound very, very similar. It's the same thing with Scottish and Irish fiddle playing. For those of us that do it, we hear the differences. For people who don't, it sounds just super similar. And they are. They're cousins and, you know, right across the water from each other. So it's not that surprising.
Over here in North America, both types of fiddling. Actually, there's more than one kind of Irish fiddling and there's more than one kind of Scottish fiddling. But Yep. But all that fiddling from the British Isles and even from Normandy, all that stuff came over here. How has it affected music here?
Well, it's interesting because over in the United States, at least from the Scottish perspective, we have this fierce desire to sound Scottish. And we get very, you know, concerned. Are we sounding Scottish enough? Whereas if you go over to Scotland, they're just playing the fiddle. They're having a good time. And they're not worried about sounding Scottish because they are. So we're very concerned about, you know, the tradition and sounding Scottish, where it's actually a very fluid tradition. It's very vibrant and still going and still evolving.
To me, that's one of the things that folk musicians are always interested in. It's like that combination of preserving the origins of the music, but then also setting the stage for innovation.
Mm-hmm. It's true. And in Scottish fiddling, we also have this culture of composition. So we learn all the traditional tunes, and then we learn sort of where the modern tunes are sounding. So we learn a tune that was written 20 years ago or 5 years ago or 1 year ago. And then once you hit a certain point, and it's pretty early on, the culture encourages you to write tunes. So the repertoire is ever expanding. And the trick when you're writing is, does it sound like it fits in the niche of Scottish while it's still being sort of innovative and sounding different and sounding new? So we're still pushing the boundaries. It's like a dog chasing something. If you've ever seen a dog chase something under a bush, the nose is under the bush. They're after the rabbit, but the back two legs are hanging out behind so they can make a quick getaway. It's the same idea. We're trying to make sure that we're in the Scottish style, but we're still pushing the boundaries a little bit. So our back legs are back in the tradition, but we're still trying to push it and make it sound new. It's so neat because the tunes that are at the core of our tradition, they've already lasted for hundreds of years. And I think there's really good reason for it. The music itself is fantastic. And even today, when we're dealing with these tunes, we keep the music alive and it's about the music, but our interpretation of it can shift. And I think that's what keeps it alive and keeps it growing, is we're focused on the music, but we all bring a little bit extra to it. So if I were to play a tune today that was played in the 18th century, they would recognize it. And vice versa, I would recognize what they're doing. But like our backup styles or the harmonies that we're using, or maybe even some of the variations that we're putting in, because this style encourages variation and creativity and individuality in our performance, I think it would be appreciated and not scorned. So, you know, William Marshall listening to me play, he'd say, yeah, I recognize that tune. What are you doing with that? That's interesting. Or maybe someone else would say, well, that's sort of cool. What was that?
You mentioned keeping the music alive. And my main music radio show is called Whiskey Before Breakfast, which is, you know, a fiddle tune that most Americans think came from North Carolina artist Mike Cross. But that's just because he made up drinking words to it, and it became a hit on the festival circuit in the 1980s. But if you look at that tune, it is an example of keeping the music alive, where you had traditional melodies coming over from the UK into Canada, working their way west to Saskatchewan, getting incorporated into sort of the music that the native people were playing, and an Anglo-Canadian fiddler put out a record with it on it, and it starts moving down to to the U.S. I'm sure you could tell lots of tales like that with Scottish music, too. I mean, that's keeping the music alive and watching the tunes change as they move around.
It's really interesting. I'll give you a quick example. A number of years ago, I was doing a gig with a friend of mine who's a very good Irish fiddler, Charlene Adzema. She's, I think, out in Wisconsin now. So she has her Irish rep, and I have my Scottish rep, and we were trying to find some tunes we had in common. Well, we finally realized Miss McLeod's. We have Miss McLeod's in common, and we started playing, and it was awful because suddenly we realized I'm playing in A, she's playing in G, she's playing what I considered the B part first, and I'm playing the A part first. It was completely backwards. So we ended up having to make a compromise. We were both uncomfortable. She played it for me, A, B, and then I played it for her in the key of G. So we were both chafing a little bit while we were playing it, but we came to a consensus on how we were going to perform it in order to make it work. But it's an old tune. It's the original title, and this is MacLeod of Rasay, which is a small island off the east coast of the Isle of Skye in Scotland. And then it moved from Scotland, it hit Ireland, it's come to the U.S., and it's in so many different cultures. I mean, you could probably walk into a jam anywhere in any style and start playing the tune, and it may be a little different from what they're used to, but everyone's, oh, it's Miss McLeod's, and they'll join in, to the point that Aaron Copland, he even took it and he integrated it into his hoedown from Rodeo, which is really uncomfortable for me when I played because I know what the tune is, and then I have to sit in the orchestra and behave myself and use the bowings that they're giving me in the style that they want me to play. It just keeps going, and it has changed, but it's still recognizable. And I think the cool thing, because I'm a big believer in just keeping the music alive and, you know, never put down your instrument and just keep going, is that that one tune has spread to so many people, and so many people play it, and then so many people can play it together. It's just amazing.
In my old time community, we call it Hop High Ladies. But, it's the same tune.
Different title, same tune. But I could come in and I was like, oh, I know that. And I could do something with you.
We are talking with Melinda Crawford Purtue of Westminster College, who, in addition to all her classical music work, is a world-renowned Scottish fiddler. You started to mention Copland using folk themes. Mm-hmm. Folk themes are everywhere in classical music.
They are, especially with composers that reach to their nationalistic roots. And it's not just, folk music from the UK. Vaughan Williams did a lot of that, and his music is incredible. You listen to it, you can tell the elements of folk music that he's bringing in there. But also composers like Brahms and Dvorak. I love programming Dvorak and Brahms for my orchestra. And as a folk musician standing on the podium conducting an orchestra, it's fun because I'm also talking to them as a folk musician. You know, if we're playing different Slavonic dances or, things like that, I'm talking to them about dance form. This is a dance, and this is what we need to do because this is at its core is a dance. Yes, it has been put into a symphonic package, but they need to understand what it means to waltz. We played the Prague waltzes recently by Dvorak. And, especially right now, if we hadn't had a pandemic, I was going to have them put their instruments down. I was going to teach them how to waltz because they don't know how to waltz, and we were playing waltzes, but it would have helped them so much if I could have just, made them get up and dance so they could feel the dance energy and what needed to be done. So when we do that, when we deal with folk music, I actually talk to them frequently as a folk musician, which I just get a kick out of. And the kids are used to me, they know what I do and they know the perspective, and it's great. All of my violinists take Scottish fiddling from me at some point. They've had it with me. And I remember I was in a rehearsal with them, and it was a new composition. It had nothing to do with folk music. But there was a rhythmic figure and an articulation that I wanted them to do in their music, and it just wasn't happening. And I finally realized it was almost akin to a Scottish snap that we do in our Strath space. We're working on it. It's like, folks, it's a Scottish snap. Do it like a snap. And it was beautiful because the next time we did it, it was perfect. And, that just gave me, it's like, I used Scottish snap in rehearsal and it worked. So, so they get both sides of it from me. And it's fun. And I'm just having a ball because I love it whenever my classical and my Scottish sides intersect. I have a switch. When I'm sitting down in an orchestral rehearsal, as a violinist, my switch is thrown to orchestral music, and I'm following my music exactly, and I'm performing, and I'm using more classical techniques. But then when I'm doing my Scottish stuff, I'm improvising things. I'm improvising my bowings and my ornamentation, and I'm thinking about it differently. So it's a skill that develops. I remember there was a time that it was several years between my stints in an orchestra and sitting down and yelling at myself mentally, going, no, follow the bowings. No, you can't do that. Follow the bowings. Be good. Because my switch had gotten rusty.
What kinds of things do you think about when you're pushing the boundaries?
A lot of times, actually, I'm thinking about rhythm or I'm thinking about variations. Our tunes are so short. So when I play through and I'm interested in making it a longer set, I will play the tune a million times and I start listening to what the tune is trying to tell me and where it might want to go or where it could go. And that becomes a variation. Sometimes it's a rhythmic variation and sometimes it's a melodic variation, just a change in note. That'll just be immensely satisfying because I feel like it needs to go there.
One of the things I've noticed, and I'm used to, if I'm playing for a square dance or a contra dance, you know, put together a two-tune medley or a three-tune medley. Mm-hmm. But it seems that a lot of Scottish fiddlers and Scottish fiddlers in the United States as well, and a lot of the Cape Breton fiddlers, mm-hmm. they do these like 4, 5, 6 song sets.
Some of it does come from playing for dancers. Because for dancers, the tradition, like a standard setup is like 8 tunes, twice through 8 tunes. So it sort of comes from that. And we have key changes in between so you can hear the different tunes. But it's also trying to turn them into performance pieces. Starting with Skinner in the 20th century, fiddling sort of moved out of the kitchen and only playing for dancing and went to the concert stage. And with that, we can't just play, you know, a 16-second tune. And be done. Get sort of boring and disjointed, not something for an audience to just really listen and kick back and enjoy. So we do build longer tunes. I know some of mine can be, you know, one tune long or two, all the way up to 4 or 5. And if I'm doing multiple repetitions, then I'm sitting on a 5 to 6 minute set, which is a nice length to do if you're on the concert stage.
Do you enjoy playing for dancers? Do you get a chance to do it very much?
I don't get as much opportunity to play for dancers as I would like. I do occasionally, and it's a blast. I love it because there's nothing better than watching people dance to the music that you're creating. So most of my work is actually for the stage.
Well, you've mentioned several things that I think we should stop and let you talk about. What kinds of things you're doing in Scottish fiddling here at Westminster College?
One of the things that I love about it is that at Westminster, anyone who plays violin can take Scottish fiddle lessons for credit. So you can take Scottish fiddle lessons for credit that will actually count toward degree programs. it really will. And I've built a string ensemble. We're in a little flux right now, the pandemic and people traveling around. We're called Kilnatid, which translates to mean literally string music. But because it's in Scottish Gaelic, it's Scottish string music. So we do that and we perform around fairly locally, nothing too far, because we can't take the students too far away from classes. And here every summer I host the Strathganey School of Scottish Fiddling, and it is a full week of Scottish fiddling 24/7. We run classes beginning up into advanced. We do private Scottish fiddle lessons. We have evening events. We do concerts that are open to the public. We do everything that we do for the entire week is completely Scotland and Scottish fiddling centric. Because we'll jam till the early morning hours and then get up again and we're right back in class. So it's a fabulous time and the best people in the world and the best music.
Melinda Crawford Pertuse and I are having a good time sitting on her back porch, and you've gotten international recognition for judging Scottish fiddling contests. What do you look for?
The first thing, first and foremost, is we're looking for style. We're looking for Scottishness and the interpretation. So it's, if I think about Scottish fiddling as being a circle, everyone has their own spot in the circle. So the first question is, are you in the circle? And if you're not, how can I help you get into the circle? If you are in the circle, what are you doing there? And how are you making it your own? How are you dealing with interpretation? So, I mean, there's execution. You know, are you playing grossly out of tune? You know, are you losing your tempo? There's that type of mechanical stuff that we evaluate as well. When someone's playing a slow air, are you telling a story? What's your phrasing like? Are you using your ornaments creatively? Are you making me feel something? Or is it wooden? And if it's wooden, how can I help you relax that so you can focus on the music and make that story? That we ask them to play a slow air so we can hear the musicality. We ask for a march because you're asking people to move without making them dance. So it's a nice in-between type of feel because we think frequently of people dancing. But with a march, you have to move them across the floor, but they can't dance. So we ask for a march. And that also suggests some of our connections with the bagpipes, because the bagpipes do a lot of marches. So it's a three-tune set. So the air they play separately, then it's a march, Strathspey Reel, as a three-tune set. And they're shifting different tune types, which transitions that can be really interesting. So they go for the march, and then they go into the Strathspey. And the Strathspey is the national tune type of Scotland. It originated in Scotland. It is associated with the Strathspey dance, and is a major genre in what we play. So that has to be in there. And there are loads of ways of playing Strathspeys. There's the Highland style. There's the Northeast style. There's a lot of stuff in terms of interpretation. So, you know, which style you are sort of planting yourself, how are you doing? Are you getting the light and shade, the tension and release? Are you getting the danceability? How's your execution? Are your snaps nice and snappy and crisp? So we're looking for that type of stuff. But, you know, it's still music. Are you doing any phrasing in there? Have you forgotten your dynamics? And then we transition into a reel, which is just, it's all about the groove. It's all about the dance. You know, it doesn't have to be the fastest thing on earth, but it does have to have groove.
So it was march, Strathspey, reel, in that order?
Yep.
Could you describe, because like most Americans, I don't know what the heck a Strathspey is.
Sure. But I think, honestly, it'd be better to play one.
Okay.
A Strathspey is combined with it's a series of sort of long, short, short, long types of notes. And the rhythm, so this is a Scottish snap. Okay, that sort of short, long. If we were looking at notation, it'd be a 16th dotted eighth. Combined with that basically, those are the building blocks of the Strathspey. So just a nice Strathspey. An old tune by the name of Captain Campbell. And the nice thing with that tune is that it can go both Highland and Northeast. So you can hear the same tune done in two different ways. But that's a great example of a Strathspey. And you can sort of feel the beat as I'm playing it. But that type of rhythm just permeates Strathspey tunes.
You mentioned you could do it in two different styles. How?
So the way I just played it was more of a Highland style. If you've ever been to the games and you've seen the dancers, the ones that are going boingy, boingy, boingy up on their toes, it's more of a Highland style. So you're going to hear. The other style would probably be a little more appropriate for like the Royal Scottish Country Dancers. Mm-hmm. It's actually a little more associated with the origins of square dance. Mm-hmm. And that's a little more across the floor. So you're not going to hear the whole, they're landing on the floor. But
one of the questions I emailed you about how choosing to play one of your favorite Strathspeys as a almost like a lament or an air. I mean, there's so much variety you can do with those melodies.
There is. And again, it comes back to the sort of the music stands alone. So I just played that one is two different Strathspeys, but I've taken a Strathspey and I have turned it into a lament because when I was playing it, that's what the tune was telling me it wanted to do. And for my own personal interpretation, that suddenly really, really resonated with me. I've never tried it with this tune, but... So sort of taking that exact same tune and transitioning it into an air.
I get the sense from talking to you that in this Scottish tradition, there is this continued tradition of innovation,
Yes. Taking
the tunes and making them your own.
Yeah, which is incredibly freeing and one of my favorite aspects of it because you can change the key, you can change the mode, major to minor, minor to major, and the creativity is appreciated. And as long as you're doing it, you know, all the technique is Scottish and you're staying true to the music and you're playing music, there's an excitement and just an appreciation for the way the tunes are staying alive and just different ways of viewing it. You know, in the beginning when you get going on this, we do a lot of mimicking. We advise people to listen. Mm-hmm. And we steal ideas. I'm listening to a recording and I hear a cool ornaments, like, oh, that's neat. I like that. But then I take it and I make it my own. Bagpipe ornaments. I mean, that's a lot of how we got our ornaments. We've stolen ideas from the other instruments. In the beginning, we do a lot of mimicking, mm-hmm. you know, and we're trying to sound like so-and-so. We're using their bowings or something. But then the expectation is, okay, now what do you think it should be? Or how do you hear it? And the expectations, those are sort of the training wheels. And they're fine. Those are good training wheels to have. But then the expectation is then you need to sound like you. The creativity is so valued. It's freeing and it's fun.
I've taken up an awful lot of your time, but before you kick me off your porch and I head back down the road, you need to brag on where people can find your music and find out more about you. Melinda Crawford,
sure.
Purtue.
Well, my website is www.melindacrawford.com. And I also have the Strathganey School of Scottish Fiddling under the same website. You can see that up in the menu bar. Or you can Google Strathganey, Strathgheny. It's actually a made-up name. So the only thing you're going to find is the fiddle camp. Strath means Valley of. In Scottish Gaelic. So when we were trying to name our school, we were trying to pick something regional. And, you know, we're surrounded by a whole lot of Indian names, which is great, but it doesn't quite work with the Scottish thing. So my husband came up with it. We took Strath and Allegheny. And that's why it's Strathganey. But the sound of it totally works. It works with, you know, Balvaney from Scotland and, you know, Strathclyde and all the other things that are over there. So Strathganey actually sounds pretty good. So, yeah, that's all available at my website. I have CDs on there and books and practice items and free tunes. I do have free tunes on my website, stuff that I have on my album. So if you're interested in just some free music, it's a good place to go. And if you have any questions about Scottish fiddling or Strathgainy, please feel free to reach out and contact me. All my contact information is on the website, too. I'd love to talk to you. I can go on about Scottish fiddling forever. www.MelindaCrawford.com
Thank you so much, Melinda. And would you like to play one more thing for us as we go out?
Sure. Sure. How about some jigs?
You've been listening to Pandemonium. The opinions expressed on this program are those of the participants and not necessarily those of WRCT or Carnegie Mellon University. Email comments or questions to WRCT Public Affairs, pa@wrct.org. Thanks for listening to WRCT Pittsburgh.
Smooth, relaxing, and easy is heard on Tube City Online Radio from McKeesport, Pennsylvania, Shaky Radio from Halkirk, UK, Vulcan Sound Radio from Bournemouth, UK, and 88.3 FM WRCT, Pittsburgh.
Recorded in the bunker at Christ Episcopal Church, North Hills in Pittsburgh, Eric O'Brien presents Smooth, Relaxing, and Easy. Thank you.
is changing, or maybe we've just stopped trying. And it's too late, baby, now it's too late, though we really did try to make it. Something inside has died, and I can't hide, and I just so easy living here with you. You were light and breezy, and I knew just what to do. Now you look so unhappy, and I feel like a fool. And it's too late, baby, now it's too late, though we really did try to make it. Something together, don't you feel it too? Still, I'm glad for what we had and how I once loved you. But it's too late, baby, now it's too late, though we really did try to make it. Something inside has died, and I can't hide, and I just
Carole King on Smooth, Relaxing, and Easy. It's too late, baby. It's too late. You just tell them that now. And started this show off with Frank Jaxfield and Wonderful Baby. Hello, how are you? I'm Eric O'Brien with you for the 10th program of the 7th year of Smooth, Relaxing, and Easy. You've heard it all 7 years on Tube City Online Radio, formerly WMCK.FM, and let's see, Shaky Radio and Vulcan Sound Radio and WRCT here in Pittsburgh. So good to be with you. If you're looking for something to celebrate other than the 10th show of the 7th season, July 29th is International Tiger Day. It gives you something to roar about. It's also National Chicken Wing Day, National Lasagna Day, National Lipstick Day, and System Administrator Appreciation Day. That's the last Friday in July. That's a good thing to appreciate if you have a system admin. July 30th is Father-in-Law Day. Never knew such a thing existed. International Day of Friendship. Not a whole lot of that going around anymore. National Cheesecake Day and Paperback Book Day. Doesn't work with the iPads or whatever. July 31st is Mutts Day. It's National Avocado Day. That's disgusting. And National Watermelon Day. Now, that's refreshing there. August 1st is National Girlfriends Day. I don't know if that's girls who are friends or if it's a man's
lady friend or what. I don't know which one it is. Maybe it's both. National Mahjong Day. It's also National Mountain Climbing Day and National Raspberry Cream Pie Day. There you go. August 2nd is Find a Four-Leaf Clover Day, which sounds more like something that you do in March. It's also National Ice Cream Sandwich Day. August 3rd is Grab Some... this is not right. Grab Some Nuts Day. Yeah, you interpret that how you want to. It also says that August 3rd is National Watermelon Day, which we said was on July 31st. We'll have to check on that. August 4th is Chinese Valentine's Day, or Daughter's Day, the seventh day of the seventh lunar month, National Chocolate Chip Cookie Day, and U.S. Coast Guard Day. Why don't you go grab some nuts and enjoy the rest of the program here? Here's John Gregory. Don't cry out loud. It's smooth, relaxing, and easy.
Summers are for taking it easy, and we've got just the right music to keep it that way. Smooth, relaxing, and easy.
Thank you. comments, I'll be agreeable, 'cause I'm hoping you.
You're listening to Smooth, Relaxing, and Easy. Smooth, Relaxing, and Easy, Alan Tew and the orchestra. Yes, T-E-W is pronounced Tew. I don't care what you say. That's Isn't She Lovely? Yeah, I'm kind of snarky today, aren't I? Margie Rayburn before that. I'm Available for Saturday Night. Ronnie Aldridge in there with Just For You. Al Capps did Mellow Yellow, the Donovan song. Yes, all the way back when. Lex de Azevedo and Happy Together, and John Gregory with Don't Cry Out Loud. If you do, just keep it to yourself. I'm Eric O'Brien, Dateline San Francisco. Believe it or not, a California man said he tested positive for both COVID and monkeypox at the same time. After testing positive for COVID, Micho Thompson began to notice red lesions all over his body and then realized he might have monkeypox. Well, he's a walking news story, isn't he? Thompson says he was sick for weeks and notes the worst of it was when he could barely get out of bed or drink water. Dr. Dean Winslow, a professor of medicine at Stanford University, says it was bad luck for Thompson to be sick with both viruses, but it's very rare to have them both, but it is still possible. That's too bad. Meanwhile, a bomb squad was called after a woman took her smoking SUV to Jiffy Lube at downtown San Diego. That's because mechanics found two bags filled with powder taped to the underside of the SUV. The investigation started at about 11 o'clock one morning and shut down a city block on Cortez Hill for about an hour. The bomb squad went in under the SUV and removed two bundles wrapped in plastic and a small electronic device. Investigators say there was no threat of an explosion, but haven't yet said what the powder or the device was. Finally, in North Carolina, a woman who found a bear climbing on her back deck of her vacation home, yes, used her teacher voice to chase the animal away. Debbie Tomlinson, who used to be a teacher in Greenville County, South Carolina, said she was at her Sapphire, North Carolina condominium when her husband alerted to a bear on the back deck. Tomlinson's video of the encounter, which she posted to YouTube, shows her talking to the bear through a window and telling it to leave. "What do you think you're doing on my porch? You get up, go, go, how dare you?" You hear her say in the video. She said she used her teacher voice to show the bear she meant business. "It works every time. I wasn't afraid. I didn't want to lose my feeders. It was very exciting," she told a TV station. Meanwhile, somebody else probably said, "Baby, don't go." Here's James Last on SRE.
Tube City Online Radio, Shaky Radio, Vulcan Sound Radio, and WRCT Pittsburgh.
The tables are empty, the dance floor's deserted. You play the same love song, it's the tenth time you've heard it. That's the beginning, just one of the clues. You've had your first lesson in learning the blues. The cigarettes you light, one after another, won't help you forget her and the way that you love her. You're only burning a torch you can't lose, but you're on the right track for learning the blues. When you're at home alone, the blues will taunt you constantly. When you're out in a crowd, the blues will haunt your memory. The nights when you don't sleep, the whole night you're crying, but you can't forget her. Soon you even stop trying.